Devices Radio Network.
Blood, sweat, and gears for informational and educational purposes only. Kids, don't try this at home.
I'm serious, dude. What do y'all think about this man? Hey, baby, get some bubble gum in this motherfucker. So, study long, study wrong.
Welcome back to Blood, Sweat, and Gear. I'm Scott McNally, and with me, as always, is S2H and Skip Hill. Skip, you are already on a roll, man. What's going on?
Oh, my God. Oh, I'm sitting here just trying. I got tears. I'm trying not to laugh. It's just funny. We have to push this button sooner. We've got to push this button sooner. Or we need, like, some kind of an outtake. At the end of the show, of all the fucked up shit that we laugh, and oh my, it's usually you. You know it is, Scott. You're the one who's laughing uncontrollably, and now it's me. And I know. Here's the thing: I'm laughing, and I know you guys aren't even really laughing, but then you'll start laughing because I'm fucking laughing. And oh god. Anyway,
Scott. Yeah, Scott. Do we have you? Are you with us still?
He's mad.
Yeah, I'm here.
All right. So we to catch everybody up here, we were trying to link Scott in with a new microphone, and he was having technical issues. Which, if it were Skip having technical issues, oh my God, he would be pissed. Skip, you would be pissed. Yeah, it wouldn't be funny at all, would it?
No. No, it would not be funny. And I admit this. I'm being completely honest. It would not be funny. And Scott is taking it incredibly. He's mad, but he's taking it in stride. I would be fucking 10 times as pissed off. He hasn't bitched me out yet. He does keep his phone keeps cutting out, so I think he gets mad and hangs up, but I'm not sure. Anyway. Oh, fucking A.
Yeah. Yeah. All so right. So what's going on with you? We're Nationals is coming up. You have people coming in town, don't you?
It's in my backyard now.
Right? How do you feel about that?
You know, it's funny because I have not been to... People are going to be like, what the fuck? You're lying. I've never been to Nationals. I've never been to USA's.
Yeah.
I've been to junior shows, but even that's been a while. So it is going to be kind of cool. I think because it's so close and you know, I got a friend slash client slash... bucket o energy by the name of Brittany Nicole, who will be coming in. She'll be at my house I tell you what, she'd already be here because she's in Pompano basically killing off time. She drove all night.
Okay.
If you don't know Brittany, I mean to say bundle o energy would be a gross understatement. I wasn't surprised. She just drove all night. She probably hasn't slept 2 hours. She probably pulled over on the side of the road, slept, has already done 2 hours of cardio.
Oh, my God.
She's waiting for me to get done with the podcast. And I thought, that's just kind of dumb because I probably should have had her come in and slide her onto the show and be like, what's up? And she'd be like, la, 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 la. You know, because that's how she is. And I don't mean that bad. I mean, she's freaking awesome, but who has that kind of energy 5 days or 4 days out from a show?
Right.
Brittany does.
She's a trip. What's her Instagram handle?
Muscle Nugget.
Yes, yeah, that's it. She's I see her posts and stuff. She is definitely full of energy. She's looking good too, man. So this is obviously going to be her last show of the year. She's competed before this though this season, hasn't she?
Oh yeah, she was down here for the Southern States. Stayed here for a couple days. When was that? July.
Okay.
In July. So that was the first time I met her. So I got to hang out with her for the first time. So that was kind of cool. Oh, that just came up. That's awesome. I see you, Scott.
Scott, as in S2H, what's he doing?
Yeah, what he's doing is he turned on his video and now he's showing his supplements. No, his arsenal. I don't want to give anything away.
Silent but deadly.
I don't.
That's a freaking machine gun, there, Scott.
You know, yeah, I'm not sure exactly what your intent was because now the video is off. That was very threatening.
Yep. I'll see you in a couple days, but.
Oh man. Anyway, she'll be here soon, so that's kind of cool. I'll go down there and hang out for a couple of days. I'll probably not stay there. I've contemplated staying there, staying down there, but it's what, 45 minutes? I mean,
you can drive home.
Yeah. So I don't know, but it'll be cool.
So you're actually going to go down and see the show.
I'm actually going to see the show.
Nice. Yeah,
which, like I say, it'll be the first time I've seen one of these. It'll be cool. And it'll be nice, too, not only, you know, obviously I want to see Brittany. At the same time, you know, there will be people down there that, you know, I haven't met. Well, some of them I haven't seen for years because I don't go. And others I just haven't met face-to-face. I don't want to give away. You know, some people who are doing the show, it's not public. And so I can't ever remember if I'm supposed to say or supposed to know if, you know, so-and-so is showing up, so-and-so is competing, things like that. So I have to be careful, and I'll just keep my mouth shut. But I know that I'll be able to bump into a handful of people that I haven't seen before. It'll be kind of nice to touch base with face to face.
That'll be cool, man. So you're gonna stay. You're gonna see her compete, but you're also gonna like hang out, I assume, to see what men's bodybuilding looks like.
Yeah, absolutely, for sure. Yep.
Kick ass. You'll have to report back, and you know, let me know what you think. And guys, that means if you're down there, if you're in Miami, look for Skip. Say hi to Skip. You know, because I'm sure you know it's always cool. When we meet listeners of the show, you know?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, so definitely say hi and tell Skip hi for me. I've never met Skip in person. You know, all these times we've talked, we've yet to meet in person. We were just talking about how we're going to try to plan something for the Arnold this year. But if you get a chance to meet Skip, you will have met him before I have met him. So there's that right there.
Exactly.
And, man, bodybuilding's just the sport itself. When I say bodybuilding, I mean the sport itself, you know, all the divisions, it's alive and well. And this is our biggest final show of the year. This is truly nationals. So it'll be cool to see what happens, man. And I wish you could say some of the names of some of the people that you know are going to be competing. But yeah, if they want to remain like dark horses or whatever, then we will all find out in a few days, right?
Exactly. And I mean, even the ones, and that's why I say I may be able to say it, but I'm not sure. So yeah. I'll take some pictures with them, because by the time I'm there, everything will be, well, by the time weigh-ins happens, that'll pretty much let the cat out of the bag, I think. And I, at the same time, I don't think it's any like, oh my God, people are going to be like, oh my God, so-and-so's here. Like, I was shocked by that. Yeah. But I don't want to be the guy that was, you know, that let it out 3, 4, 5 days prior if I'm supposed to keep something to myself. So yeah. I'll just keep it to myself for now. You see me in a picture with somebody, be like, oh, yep, he's definitely in Miami, you know, or I wouldn't be taking a fucking picture with him.
All right. So Scott, S2H, what's happening with you, brother?
I'm working with my Blue Yeti mic that's not working, and I'm going to continue to work on that progress. I have to go fly down to Florida tomorrow, emergency call out, and I'll be back soon. It's just a turnaround flight, fly in, about an hour and a half, and do some business and come back. I heard we're getting a new co-host after tomorrow, too. Skip will be gone. He'll no longer be with us.
Dave Crossland stepping in to take his place.
The cats for the next couple days. I'll keep them inside.
Yeah, Dave Crossland's going to fill in for Skip from now on.
Okay, good. I'm sure Dave will strangle Skip at some point, and we'll be fine. No, actually, I was going to call Skip's wife and tell her that Skip said he can't take her into public, and then I don't have to go to Miami. It'll get taken care of.
Oh, that is fucking horrible, but well played. Yeah. It was well played. I got to give it to you. That was good. And then I'm just asking, really nice to just stop right there. Let's not go any further with that.
What am I doing? I was pretty frustrated with the mic. I went and sought expert opinion, which is the 10 Indian YouTubers that go take it and turn it on these, you know, I mean, it's a 1 minute video that should take 10 seconds, but you know, but nothing seems to work. So I don't really know what to do. I think I'll just, try to figure it out. But other than that, I'm doing nothing.
Right on. Mm-hmm. So I'm going in for some dental work tomorrow, guys. So I really don't want to do this. And I don't know. I kind of have a fear of the dentist. I didn't talk about this on Bodybuilding Nerds. I mentioned it to Dave Crossland, but that show isn't going to come out until after this stuff is all said and done. I'm not looking forward to this. I'm getting an implant right near it's kind of like off to the side. It's on my bottom jaw. So they're literally going to, it's all prepped. I've been through two different processes. One was a bone graft. And then now this next one, several months later, they are going to literally drill a hole into my jawbone.
What does this stem from? Like a bad root canal or what is?
No,
you've had some problems.
It's the same thing. It's an ongoing process. They removed the tooth. It had broken and there was nothing they could do about it. And I guess the issue is that I'm very acidic. And so this tooth was just, there was nothing more they could have done. Had I dealt with it like years ago when I really should have, then that probably would have saved it. But it was an issue. And so they took it out. And then they had to let it all heal and they had to graft the bone because like the surface has to be flat, you know, like they need like a good foundation to put that post in or whatever. And so, yeah, now I'm going to go in tomorrow. And here's the thing is that you have the option to you could do an IV sedation and be like basically out, or you can just do the gas. And I just decided to just do the gas. And now I'm feeling like, man, should I have been put out for this thing, you know? And now I'm asking myself.
Yeah.
The gas isn't too bad.
No, the gas is like, it's nice while you're on it, kind of, but you're still there. You know what I mean?
Not really.
Yeah, I don't know.
It beats the time I had my wisdom teeth taken out.
Yeah, I've done that too, though.
Yeah, but were you awake and did they use a chisel to chip them out?
I don't remember. Damn. That doesn't sound fun.
No,
it was pretty, it was not, it was actually only two, I had two impacted ones that were crooked, slight half and whatever it is, partial impaction.
Okay.
And so they just gave me a local and stuck a fucking chisel in my mouth with a hammer. And just, I mean, I was awake, wide awake. There's like teeth chunks flying out of my mouth.
Whew. Yeah. I would, if that happened to me, I would have blocked it out.
Well, I mean, I asked for extra drugs, which there was a bonus plan after it was over. But, you know, while I was going on, it wasn't very much fun.
Yeah. Well, listen, I want to tell everybody thank you. Thank you very much to everybody who has given us questions. Because last week I had said, hey, guys, we need questions, you know, blah, blah, blah. We got an outpouring, guys. We have like a ton of questions now.
Sweet.
Yeah. You guys don't be too excited. Not at all at once.
I know, right? Yeah. I was like, I was waiting for Scott, and I think Scott was waiting for me. But no, that's awesome. That's freaking. And we have a caller, if I'm not mistaken, right?
I think we have two callers, actually.
Oh, okay.
Yes. And we have some shout outs, too, here. I'm kind of, I feel like a dick because I don't know how to pronounce this person's name. Go look at your phone, Skip, and tell me how you think you pronounce that. Because I'm terrible with.
Okay, let's see.
There's a lot of L's in there, and I don't know if we're talking like the L's are supposed to be pronounced like Y's. You know what I'm saying? Like, where are we going with this?
Yeah, this is a tough one. Lal. Okay, here's my best.
Okay. Thank you, first of all.
Lalaletti Zialero. That's what I think it is. Lalaletti Zialero.
That sounds good.
Yeah, it's the best I like I can
that.
Do.
Yeah, that sounds good. And that's her Instagram handle. She's got a pretty jacked physique too. She's a listener of the show. She's got some sweet tattoos, wicked bicep shot too.
I'm gonna apologize ahead of time because if I just destroyed your name, I apologize, but I think I'm close. I think I'm close, but I'm not sure. So
check out her pictures. Check out her pictures if you get a chance over there on Instagram. She's got some wicked quads on her too. It's great shape. But let's see. We got a bunch of other shout outs here. Time Captured Now, Steve Barnes, Jake R2R, and Mr. Roush. He's a former client of mine. Dude's got a great physique. And Kate D, she says, love the content lately, guys.
Oh, what does that mean?
I was kind of wondering the same thing. Like, lately. You could
that
add like a...
You've stepped it up lately, but not so much before.
What if you like... Yeah, you could add like a dot, dot, dot in there. Love the content, dot, 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 lately.
Right.
That's what I think it was an underhanded diss. What do you think?
Apparently we're improving. We just need to run with that, I think.
Yeah, yeah. That's Kate, though. She's out of Canada, and she's definitely a longtime listener of the show. I figured I'd just kind of cut things short here with our banter section, though, if that's cool by you guys, because we have so many good questions. We could probably hop off to break here and just get right back and probably banter some more and talk some shop at the same time. What do you guys say?
Yeah. Sounds good.
All right, cool. Guys, we'll be right back in just a second.
Laid back
with my mind on my money and my money on my mind. Rolling down the street, smoking in love, sipping on gin and juice.
Laid back
with my mind on my money and my money on my mind.
Team Skip has been synonymous with bodybuilding conditioning for the last two decades. From NFL players to professional bodybuilders to 40-something guys that just want to kill it in the gym and their shirt sleeves. If you have too much skin, call Skip. TeamSkip.com, because skin is overrated.
Hey guys, Scott McNally here.
And this is VJ Peary.
You guys know us from here at the Advices Radio Network. Well, we also have another show, Bodybuilding Nerds Radio. We've got everything from supplement reviews
to shout-outs,
listener questions,
and of course, our weekly bodybuilding podcast reviews.
So check us out every Friday.
Or whenever you feel like cooking or doing your cardio or basically wasting time with us.
You can hear us at bodybuildingnerds.com.
Also on iTunes. Bodybuilding Nerds, it's time to get nerdy.
Hey everyone, Scott Stevenson here. My new book, Be Your Own Bodybuilding Coach, is out. You can get it at byobbcoach.com as well as Amazon and Barnes & Noble internationally.
Talking about the ghetto. Funky, funky, get out. Trying to survive. Trying to stay alive.
All right, guys, and welcome back to Blood, Sweat, and Gear. Skip Hill, S2H, and I'm Scott McNally. We've got our first caller on the line. Who is this? Who are we with here?
This is Kate.
Kate, are you the same Kate that asked for a shout-out?
Yes, I am.
So,
shout-out to Kate. Thanks for calling. Next caller.
What's a can we define something here? You said great content lately. Was there like a comma in there, or was there an implied pause before the word lately? Like, does that imply
this potentially? We're not sure how to take this.
Yeah, is that a good thing or?
I kind of think that you guys are behaving like a couple of women right now. you're reading between the lines of something that's not there.
See, I didn't ask that question. They did.
So. See, I knew who the women on this call were.
Well, I think we found my replacement.
It's been great having Skip, guys. We'll see you soon. Yeah. All right.
I'm tired.
So,
I only have one cat, and I don't push it in a stroller.
Wait, you have a cat? There you go, right there. We don't need a question. Let's just talk about your cat.
Blood, sweat, and cats.
Anyways.
So what's up? What's the question for us?
So the question is, I'm a female bodybuilder, and one of the questions that I've grappled with is particular to the cycle. And I know that there are some women who are probably going to want to shoot me because there's a lot going on in terms of women health, grinding to get, you know, as lean as we can to get on the stage and really be competitive. But really what I wanted to know are variables on and impacts of training intensity and AAS on a female cycle in terms of the potential benefits for building muscle. I mean, other than the obvious cost savings, you know, what are some of the muscular benefits that a woman can experience from losing her period? And then I guess in contrast to that, what are some of the downsides to the loss cycles that people are maybe not talking about?
So you're asking, when we say cycles, we're talking about the menstrual cycle, first of all. And okay, just because we talk about a lot of cycles on this show, and sometimes they're yeah, different cycles. Yeah. So you're saying, like, what are the benefits of losing it?
Mm-hmm.
Are there benefits? I mean, obviously, it would be beneficial to not be on your period the second you get on stage, right? But
yeah,
I don't know.
Well, it's huge benefits when you're competing.
What's the benefit, Scott?
Well, you're stabilized as your hormones. You don't have the up and, you know, the effects of menopause. I mean, of cycling every month. So, you know, estrogen, hormone related. So it actually stabilizes the on the female side, their hormones, because they're not going up and down because they have three different phases before they have a period.
Hmm. That makes sense.
You know, it imagine on a guy side, just imagine this, imagine you're testosterone and estrogen, and this is not a direct correlation, but direct apples to apples. But imagine that once every other week, something shifts in your body hormonally. Estrogen goes way up, testosterone down. Just imagine that, riding that that roller coaster. So, and then with that comes less water retention and those type of things with females. That they would normally experience when they were going through those different phases of towards their menstrual cycle. So yeah, there's advantages to it to an extent, but you know, long term, I mean, I've seen women that compete and don't have a period for over a year.
Hmm.
So there's, you know, and I think to her question too is the downside to it is, there's no real masterful art of it. There's no saying, okay, I'm going to get to this body fat roughly, or this body weight to compete and use these supplements and things are going to shut off. Mm-hmm. I do think that women that compete a lot pretty much kind of know when it's going to happen, either, you know, through the way they feel or just post, you know, experience prior. Like when my wife competed a lot, there was a certain body weight she would hit, and that's when things, you know, shut off for that time period. But I can remember many times after post competing that it was just kind of a toss in the dark. You know, there might be, it wasn't like, okay, after 3 months, I'm going to put X amount of pounds back on. I'm going to come off whatever I was doing. And then I'll start spotting maybe 1 month. It wasn't, there was no like real known factor there. You know what I mean?
Hmm.
It's a real guessing game in that regards, as far as what happens post show. But I think most women, after they compete quite often, I'll say, let's say 4 to 5 times, maybe 6 or so, they kind of know. They're like, okay, I'm getting this lean. I'm getting in this, I'm at this body weight. I'm in this kind of condition. And even with or without supplements, sometimes they'll just know when it's going to happen. You know.
So what about in the off season, right? So you run a cycle, and now I'm actually talking about, you know, a steroid cycle, and you drop, like your period goes, like it's gone.
Right.
Like, what about with that? Like, is there a benefit in terms of gaining muscle and strength? Because training intensity is obviously very high when you're cycling, right? And mm-hmm. So then you throw that in with, you know, losing those hormones and those fluctuations, or they seem to go away, or maybe they're not fully gone. But like, is there any benefit in the off season, like when you're in that really heavy bulk? Because like right now, I've already put, since I stopped competing, like I'm up, I think 30 pounds, and I'm not fat, but I'm fat. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, I would say this. So obviously, you know, estrogen and testosterone will bind to a lot of the same receptors. So by having, mm-hmm. you know, by controlling your, by cycling and controlling your estrogen some, you're going to get, it's just like a male, you'll get more benefits from doing so. I find with women that it's one of those things where they, there's certain compounds that tend to work better and they don't aromatize generally. And I will take that. The only exception to that I will take is, you know, a lower dose use of like cypionate or propionate, which have some aromatase to them, do have their benefits. But in general, that's why women tend to respond better to non-aromatizing compounds. Now, is there a benefit to that? I think in my experience, the longer, and this is just anecdotal, working with people, my wife, the longer you stay on and the longer you don't have a period, there's a better likelihood that, you know, it's going to take a long time to regulate that when you get off. Let's just say in general persons go normal, you know, you know, body fat's above, I don't know. Everybody throws out numbers, but I'd say if it's above, 12 or 14%, you're probably going to, that's going to cause you to move back towards your normal cycling or, and, or being off AAS. But it really is. I mean, I don't know how long you've been competing, but I'm sure you know ladies, or you've maybe experienced yourself where it's not really, you're like, okay, I don't know really what's going on. You know, there's no real, real road map for it that works perfectly.
Right.
Yeah. I don't know if I have a whole lot to add, because I agree with a lot of what Scott's saying. The other thing is too, is I'm not going to pretend, and I'm not in any way implying that Scott is pretending either. He's going off of his experience stuff, but I'm certainly not an expert in the area of the, you know, hormones versus, menstruation cycles and things like that. It's my best guess, just like it is, you know, with Scott too. And I understand that. So I'm just trying to be clear on that. But I think that the best way for me to explain what I think on this is the period is just more of a gauge, because it is different for everybody. It's more of a gauge of your hormones aren't completely out of whack until that cycle goes away. And then you pretty much know. And, you know, just like you were talking about, Scott, with numbers, you know, I've thrown around 9%, but where I got that from, I don't know. When body fat gets below that 10 or 9%, you can pretty much count on the fact that even without adding AAS, a woman's going to be without a cycle or be without her menstruation cycle. So obviously it isn't, I don't know that it's necessarily a body fat issue. The body fat indirectly is impacting the hormones in a negative way at that point. But it's really difficult for me to say. I guess I don't know that I see a direct relationship to, or pros and cons. It's just difficult to say. And I know that sounds like I'm kind of flopping around the answer, but it's just a difficult thing to answer. So it being different for everybody. Yeah, that's kind of a given. And the off season too, you know, to answer that, and I'm dancing around it, I guess. I'm probably not giving a very good answer. I'm a little bit distracted here too, because did you hear all the noise? And I'm going to have to cut out of it. You hear the noise in the background, Scott?
No, not at all.
Oh my God. I thought you could tell I was fucking with my mic. I keep having to turn it off. Turn it on, turn it off, because something is going on out here where they're loading shit. So I'm trying to stay in the fucking question. And then when I get ready, I think you're going to come to me. I turn off the fucking mic. Then it's not on, or turn it on. It's not on. And I'm having to lean it forward. And I'm thinking you can hear all this. So it's totally, I mean, you could tell by the end of my question or end of my answer, I'm going nowhere. So fuck me and cut it out. And he just took off about a minute and a half ago. So I think I'm okay now, but I apologize.
Wait, what just happened? No, we're good. We're good. We didn't hear any of it, man.
All right. I'm like, oh, but my God. I thought you could hear me fucking with the mic the whole time.
We would have blamed Scott if we had heard all that.
And I was going to text you. And then I'm like, he's not going to fucking see it. Because at first I was saying, don't even come to me. Because I fucking beep, beep, beep. It's like there's a fucking forklift out here or a backhoe or something.
You were very professional throughout the whole process. And then you unveiled everything. Yeah, you did such a good job up until now.
That's why I am not a professional. And I am not, though I am paid incredibly well, I could be paid better in a higher market. And that'll never happen because I can't pull this off. So I do apologize. Fuck me.
Well, Kate, you just got a little taste of what blood, sweat, and gear is like. What do you think? How did that feel?
Couple kittens in a yarn factory.
Yep. Hey, one other thing I wanted to Kate, I want this is another kind of just anecdotal thing, but I've seen this quite often in women that compete and use AAS for longer periods of time or continuous use, is they tend to reach menopause at an earlier age, and that's completely based off of just people I know, and you know, but you know, not so much like going off of okay, the mother of a lady would, you know, generally when she went, you know, kind of relate to each other as far as when they enter menopause. But I've seen a lot of women that are using AAS and competing and moving up and down in body weights and body fat percentages tend to enter menopause earlier in life. So that's not like a scientific fact. It's just kind of what I've seen.
Well, I know I saw it with my wife, and there's also a connection, I believe, with, or a potential connection, and I don't want to get off topic here, but with endometriosis and the essentially building of tissue. Once that starts happening, there were questions about my wife and mild AAS use and the fact that her endometriosis was so bad and ended up needing a, you know, full hysterectomy in like 33, 34. I wouldn't consider her usage, you know, abusive, but at the same time, that's all relative, and it would depend on who you would talk to. So there's a potential link there. There's a lot of things, you know, Scott, you work with a lot of women, probably not only menopausal, but perimenopausal, you know, pre, obviously, menopausal. Oh. Yeah, exactly. So there are things I think that we see that we could give pretty good guesses with, but not be completely sure. And that's what I was trying to touch on, was the fact that it is difficult to answer a question like that. I almost feel uncomfortable doing it because I just feel like someone out there is going to be like, and you're a prep guy. You're not a, you know, endocrinologist. You're not an expert in this area. So it makes me a little bit uncomfortable. And I probably have a little bit more limited experience than Scott. Scott, you probably work with more women, I would imagine, than I do over the years.
Yeah, I mean, for quite a long time, I had quite a few. I just found that it was not that it's easy for it to. I mean, there's things happen, you know, people compete. But I would say this though, on the side of when the period ceases, when you're getting leaner and stuff, that was starting to get pretty predictable with some of them that had competed quite a bit. But on the other side, it was. The only real advice I'd give them on the other side is, hey, it's like anybody. It's good to take a break every once in a while off season. I don't like growth hormone use for women who have cancer in their history, their direct, you know, mother, grandmother, that type of thing. I that's probably not a good thing. I also got some good discussions with this with a doctor that my wife had worked with, something else that was pretty much a subject matter expert on pituitary thyroid issues. And he voiced the same thing, but also actually he was kind of pro AAS in some regards, depending on what it was. But it's like anything. I don't think he can. It depends on your goals. I mean, and no one, we didn't ask you. I don't know if you know you're trying to move up in weight classes or what your real end goal is. But I think you have to take a same approach as most people and just take some breaks here and there, and you know, and. You know, testosterone is not a primary hormone in females, so you're going to get some good responses to it. But like anything, it's like the virilization question. That's like the million-dollar question with most women. Well, that's one you can just, I mean, you know, everybody's like, oh, women, a lot of women will say, I can take Anavar and I'll be fine. But I've seen, you know, I think it's affected some differently than others for sure. So when you start entering that hormone, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, and I think, you know, even just going back to your point, I mean, it's actually scary to even ask a question about the benefits of this type of stuff when you lose your period, right? I mean, because everyone's going to jump down your throat. But the thing is that there is very little, if not no research that speaks to some of the effects and the long-term effects for women. Like, for example, then, you know, Scott, you talk about using GH and having somebody who's had cancer in their linear family history. And I mean, those are things that you don't generally read about. They're not published. This information is not widely made available. And so, you know, there aren't very many people who I could go to an endocrinologist and say, what are the benefits or the concerns with this? they're probably not going to give me the same answers as people who've worked with hundreds of competitors and have seen outcomes and outputs from physical reactions that people have had. Like, these are the things that I've seen, or these are the things that some of my competitors have experienced, and so on and so forth. So
right.
There's certainly value in this particular forum. And in, even if it is opinion based, you know, I would rather hear your opinion and your thought as a thought leader in this area, even though you're a prep guy, than for me to go to somebody or have shame and not have the ability to go to have those conversations. Because as women, I mean, we're, I think in a lot of cases, and you know, Scott, you've had some of these things even on some of the advices shows recently, where we're still oppressed within a community that is, in some cases, oppressed, right? Where we can't go out and have the conversations and ask the questions to get ourselves the information that can at least lead us down a similar okay path instead of going down a pig trail.
Sure. Well, the fact that you just said that is important because coming from you, great. Coming from me, or another prep guy, it sounds like we're trying to justify the fact that, oh, okay, we don't have a medical background, or we're not a professional or an expert in this area, but we're going to give our opinion anyway. So to hear you say that really adds credence to, you know, I know, speaking for myself, myself being more comfortable giving an opinion like that.
Yeah.
All right. Well, good stuff, guys. We got a bunch more callers. Kate, thank you very much for your time. We appreciate you calling in with us.
Pet that cat for me.
Thanks, guys. Have a good day.
Take care. Bye.
All right, guys. I'm going to jump to one of the questions we had on the board. This is from Longstring One. He says, hey, guys, every time I train, I get cramps 30 to 60 minutes after my workout is done. Oh, after, every time I train chest, this happens. He says, I only get cramps in the chest muscles, no other muscle groups. The cramps are always completely gone the morning, the day after having trained. I've added 5 grams of taurine to my intra-workout shake, which has not helped with the post-workout cramping. However, 500 milligrams magnesium seems to reduce the cramping by a touch. I get the cramps in my chest, especially in movements where the chest is contracted or shortened. One example is reaching with my right arm to my left side of the body can cause cramping when I flex and stay. It stays flexed for a short time. Any thoughts on why this is happening and any ideas? He says, I follow a PPL split, so push-pull legs, then rest and repeat. I also would like to add that chest is definitely one of my strongest muscle groups, both in size and strength-wise, and I can feel my chest very easily and always have. I don't really know when I started getting these cramps post-workout, but it's probably been in about 3 or 4 years. Thanks for constantly pumping out the awesome content. Guys, what are your thoughts on this one? This is something that I get too, usually in the packs as well as in the lats.
I think it has a lot to do with the fact that he's probably training chest harder. That's number one.
Mm.
Number two, before he even mentioned the fact that he was crossing his body, I was thinking this is probably from pec deck slash cable fly movements where there is this massive peak contraction in the top position, because one muscle is not going to, I mean, the fact that one muscle group is cramping and the other ones don't is not a direct relationship between like some sort of electrolyte issue or, oh, it's clen related or taurine related, that sort of thing. So I can understand where, I mean, any type of cramping, you're going to come across an electrolyte that is not going to be, something's out of whack for you to cramp at all, whether you're training hard or you're not training hard. So I'm not surprised that he found one of the electrolytes that may have helped a little bit. That's not, I guess, surprising to me. But he's touching on the fact that the chest is a strong muscle group for him. He's probably pounding it. Even when it's not a strong muscle group, most people pound their chest harder than any other muscle group. Now, let me elaborate on that, because people may be thinking, well, I do more for legs because they're weak. Okay, but let's talk about the actual set itself and going to failure or even beyond failure, like using intensity techniques like drop sets, supersets, if you do this, things like that, rest, pause, whatever. It's uncommon to do things like that for, or not as common, maybe not uncommon, but not as common to do them for, say, legs or back. If you do, it still almost certainly won't be to the intensity level that we do for chest. One of the reasons is, number one, chest is so important to everybody. It just is, no matter what we say about it. The other thing is the repetitions and the failure is more of a black and white. You either get the rep or you don't. Where with back, you might be able to go for another 30 reps if you did partials. So there's this black and white, you can either press it or you can't. So in my opinion, not any other muscle group in our body, by and large, okay, and I understand this is a blanket statement, but still, the majority of people train chest harder than any other muscle group, whether they mean to or not. So I think that plays a part. The other thing is the peak contraction. I would almost bet that if you took the peak contraction movements out, unless he's just doing like 30 sets, but if you take the peak contraction movements out, see if you cramp. I would not be surprised if he didn't.
Scott, anything you want to add to this one?
No, I think, I think that was the same thing I was thinking, because most people that cramp in their back, their upper, lats, and then in their chest is because when you walk around the gym, you're also training it, and then you're contracting the muscle because those are the two favorite muscles to ILS and contract while you're walking around the gym.
Yep.
So, most bodybuilders don't have the most normal posture, especially after while they're training or after, because they tend to walk more erect and with their delts, shoulders out, and on top of that, the chest is a small muscle group and it's trained like quads.
Thank you.
With most people, they just tear it to shreds. I'd also say if he's cramping, I would say, are you trained? This is just something that I've had happen. If you train way past you're losing your pump, and then you try to contract the muscle, the blood, everything's left the muscle, and you're trying to contract a muscle because you want to, or you cross your arms over, whatever. I used to get a cramp in my chest when I'd reach my hand around my opposite shoulder and like scratch my back, on the like my right hand to my left rear delt or something, and my chest would start to cramp.
I think that's what he's saying he's doing, which I kind of laughed when he said that. I was thinking to myself, well, then don't fucking do that. Like, if you take any other, think about it, you're over contracting it, basically. So if you take another muscle group, let's say it's like you could even say your lats. If you take your left arm and you try to reach behind you to touch your right glute, all things being equal, that same thing should happen. And if it doesn't, then it's almost like there's your test. Because then you're doing something and you're training that muscle group harder than other muscle groups, or harder than probably than you need to be, because that's you're reaching. You're not doing something natural. It's not like you just, I'll do a quick most muscular and it's cramping up. No, he said he was reaching across his body and that's when it was cramping. Well, that's a pretty strong peak contraction, for lack of a better word, when you're across the body with your chest muscles that's already fatigued and you've already beaten the shit out of in the gym.
Yeah, I'd say too, throw a little, make sure he could, if you're a no, if speaking to the question, the guy asked the question, if you're a no salt guy, a no sodium guy, which is, I've seen this too. So you might need to add a little more sodium to your meal, especially if you're not going to back off the chest training, and make sure you're hydrated, because once the pump goes down and the blood starts leaving the muscle, it takes a lot, it takes stuff, nutrients and stuff with it. So, and also hydration. So, I think he's just like Skip said, that's probably overtraining it, depleting the muscle. And then, think about it. If you go run, runners, people, play in sports to get cramps. Why do they get cramps in their calves, football players? Because everything's been depleted from the calf, or the body doesn't have the nutrients, the micronutrients and stuff to replace in that muscle, and they're using it all the time.
Right.
So, it's probably a combination of all that.
I'm adding a caller in here. This is going to be a fun one for you, Skip. This is going to be a Skip question. There's no question in my mind.
Yeah.
Was it a cat in the stroller? So, by the way, the other caller said she would never put her cat in a stroller.
Well, see, it's been back and forth with Kate and I, because I was like, I don't know. She was saying we were better lately. Then she said Kat. I'm like, oh, my God, I like her. Now she's saying no Kat Stroller. I'm like, I don't know. I'm back to where I was. We're like all over the place here.
I just got a message from her. She said, you're the only man on that show.
Ooh.
Was that supposed to be sent to me?
No.
Like, did she say tell Skip?
Well, it could be McNally, so it's, you know, we have the same first name, but it's not Skip or any other made-up pomo name like that.
Hello?
Hey, is this, who is this Cameron?
Yes, this is.
Hey, what's up, man? This is Scott McNally. I'm with S2H in Skip Hill. Welcome to Blood, Sweat, and Gear.
How y'all doing?
Doing good, man. How are you?
Doing good.
I'm doing doing pretty good today.
Hey, before we get to your question, I got to say, you sent me this picture a little while back. It's of a growler of, it's called Circle City Kombucha. It looked amazing, man. Was that some good kombucha from the farmer's market?
It was. It was. Near my girlfriend's hometown, every weekend at Circle City Kombucha, they go out there, and when you finish the growler, you can bring it back, and they'll fill it up for some unreasonably low price, like a dollar. So,
oh, my God.
She'll go out there and drink it. I got her hooked on it.
I got to check that out one day, get down to Indiana. So you've got a very Skip-based question. What do you got for us?
Well, it's actually concerning my girlfriend. I told her I live in Florida, actually Northwest Florida. I live in Fort Long Beach. So decided when Skip said he was moving to Florida, but then I learned that 10 hours away. So.
Big state.
Yeah. So when she comes down here, if she doesn't wear sunblock, she'll just get roasted. So my question is, would melanotan 2, would that benefit her?
Almost certainly. I mean, I'm 65% German. So basically, if I just have normal color, I can pull up my shirt and show you like blue kidney, blue veins, things like that. Yeah. I'm very fair complected. So one of the things that I did was I was concerned because I would do what everybody else did. I would burn in the spring for a few weeks, and then I would get tan, and it wasn't much of a tan, but I would get a tan through the summer. And then, of course, it's the end of the summer, so I quit. And I would be on this cycle or circle of tanning, I guess, every year. And it occurred to me that I thought, gosh, you know, I did a little bit of research, and it sounded to me, based on my research, that a lot of the damage happens from the burn, not necessarily from the tan. I understand that you'll be told by dermatologists and skin cancer experts and stuff that exposure is the issue. But I'm not buying that, because there are plenty of people who get exposure in warmer climates, and that's not where the majority of skin cancer cases are. Okay. The skin cancer cases are typically in the areas where there are fair skin populations. So what's happening is they're not used to the exposure. They get the exposure, they burn, and that's where the damage comes from. So with melanotan 2, you're taking someone who potentially has less pigmentation and is more prone to being burned, which means they're more prone to the damage from the sun, and you're lessening that to a certain degree by potentially limiting, not eliminating, but limiting the potential for burn, which means the potential for damage. So I guess the best way to put it is this: the more fair skinned someone is, in my opinion, and I've heard Stan Efferding say this, I've heard other people who have used melanotan for a very, very long time, not just used it, but done a lot of research on it as well, say the same thing. Those are the people that can benefit from it the most, that it can help the most in the position of those who may be more prone to burning, damage to the skin, and potentially whether it be, you know, squamous or melanoma or that sort of thing. So I know myself, that's why I've stayed with it for so long. I will rather keep a tan, and that will limit my exposure, because then I don't, and my damage, that I don't have to burn every year. I just get the tan, I keep it, I go to the tanner a couple times a week, and I do that year round. And if I do happen to be out in the sun riding my motorcycle, I'll be out there for 4 or 5 hours, there's not a cloud in the sky, like I did to Daytona about 3 weeks ago, I didn't get burnt. So I would definitely say that that's, now at the same time, and I always say this because I'm always careful with things like this, I do not know what the long-term ramifications of melanotan 2 are. The only thing that I do know, and I came to this, and there is no information, there may be a little bit now, there was none when I looked a couple years ago on the internet anywhere, but I will tell you matter-of-factly that over time, when you combine melanotan use, even in low dosage, with AAS, it will raise your RBC, hematocrit, and hemoglobin levels. And I'm going to give you just one example to make a point. I have friends and clients in town. I say friends and clients because I've known them for a very long time and I consider them friends. From France, right now while I'm doing the show. This guy's on TRT. He has been on TRT for a while. He's older like I am. But just TRT dosages with a very low dose melanotan 2 dose, and his hematocrit came back at 57. He quit the melanotan 2 for only 5 weeks, kept the TRT dose the same, and his hematocrit dropped 4 points in 5 weeks.
Wow.
That's a, and all that does is, I've seen it before. I've seen it with me. I've seen it, and I originally got it from a friend in Colorado who ended up in the hospital, and the doctors were saying it was melanotan 2, and I laughed. I'm like, there is no connection between, because I did not think there was. And that's when I started to look into it just a couple years ago, because I thought, this is absurd, but I figured not so absurd that I better not fucking check on this, and started looking into it. Then I found it with my own blood work, and then just now I have this friend, like I say, from France, who that, I mean, that just continues. I continue to hear things now like this now, like we're talking about it right now. I'll hear from a couple people who have had similar situations. So down the road, you know, I don't know how old your girlfriend is. If she's not using, you know, AAS and she's relatively young, she's not going to have probably any problem at all. But you start to get those years of AAS behind you, like myself, which tend to cause the increase with the viscosity with blood, and then you get the MT2 in there, and they play off each other, and it's not terribly pretty.
Nice. That's good feedback.
Well, there's a study done by the CDC on skin cancer, and the four highest states for skin cancer per capita are, what are they? They were Idaho, Utah.
Colorado's in there.
No, I think Vermont and Maine.
Oh,
top four. Really? Texas, California, and Florida were in the bottom.
Really?
There you go. What does that tell you?
Because it's based off of the four top states had people with the most inconsistent or intermittent sunlight exposure to their skin. So.
Exactly.
Yeah. So she, we went to school at Purdue. She's still there.
And well, you're smart.
I try. Thank you. so it's cold there, like 8.5, 9 months of the year, and it's great for bulking because you're always wearing, you know, hoodies and stuff.
Right.
there's no sun.
Yeah. I tell her to ease into it. I mean, most people, my wife burns like super easy, bad, like really bad, and she's from up north, and so I tell her, you know, hey, it's okay to go like 5 minutes and then cover up, but most people don't have that kind of. Discipline, maybe. I don't know if it's the best word, but, or, you know, they stay out too long. But if she can just get little tidbits and kind of build her way up and not just cook herself right out of the hole, you know, that's always better. I know it's not the fun part, especially if you go to the beach and show up and, you know, you want to go out and you get just roasted like a lobster. But if she can, like, start before she shows up and maybe spend 5 minutes, 7 minutes, 10, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Kind of just build up to it.
I agree.
And use a stronger sunscreen and go from there. I mean, I don't burn real easy at all. Even if I haven't been in the sun, I'll get tan. But I've been in these kind of environments most of my life.
But even with the melanotan, too, it's important to know you can still burn. And if it doesn't matter if you're taking it or not. If you get burnt, there is damage there. Obviously, it's relative. You know, the more you're burnt, the more damage there is. They even say that a lot of the damage as when you get into your adult years is actually from your childhood prior to the first, say, 12 years of life. So if you look back, basically what they're saying is there's a connection between adult skin cancer and really bad burns prior to 12 years old. So, you know, take that for what it's worth. I would say this. Yeah, that's great information and everything. But even as an adult, I don't want to burn. And I think it's a good idea that you don't. Keep a little bit of a tan. I think that is far safer. And I've had conversations with my wife had melanoma. She had 3 melanoma surgeries to have. And melanoma, for the record, is not squamous. It is the bad shit that's looking for an organ to kill you. So we dealt with that in 2011, 2012, and it was rough. And from there, she got the bad advice of saying, of being told, stay out of the sun. You have no business being in the sun. Use sunscreen all the time. And she was pale white, and she'd be at a baseball game of my son's for 5 minutes and burn like a goddamn lobster. You still have normal life where you're going to be in the sun. So I spoke to her cancer doctor, and I said, this doesn't make any sense. You're saying absolutely no exposure. And she admitted that that is a very rehearsed, it's almost like abstaining from sex. Like it's a knee jerk. Oh my God, sex is going to cause all your fucking problems and diseases and babies and AIDS and everybody's going to die. When in reality, you still will benefit. There are health benefits to being in the sun, but it's a moderation issue. So my argument was, if she goes in the sun for a little while versus absolutely nothing, at least when she's out for 10 or 15 minutes at the lake or she's at my son's baseball game, the potential for damage, if there is slight overexposure, is nowhere near as bad as if she's just has pale skin all the time. And she agreed. She completely agreed with me. But had I not had that conversation with her and really pressed her on it, I would have never gotten that information from her. So I guess the point that I'm making is I don't think it's very good advice when the American Cancer Association basically tells everybody, and this is what they do. They basically say sun is bad. Always use this ridiculously high sunscreen, not just bad for adults, but for kids too. And don't be out in the sun. I mean, that's really the message. They don't say sun in moderation is the best way to increase vitamin D levels and that there is a direct also correlation between vitamin D levels and cancer, for fuck's sake. So you don't want to have, and most, my doctor told me that the large majority of people who do blood work to check their vitamin D levels, the large majority of them are low. He was so shocked that mine were within normal levels because he said that was uncommon. I thought to myself, holy shit, that's a huge, huge immune system issue and health issue when your vitamin D levels aren't there. So it's moderation. It's get sun, but don't get burnt.
All right. Well, we appreciate the call, brother. Does that answer everything?
Yeah. One real quick thing. This was actually from a while ago, I think in the summer. You were starting your diet, Scott, and you used what Skipper referred to as the fat burner, and I actually asked my girlfriend, Sarah, she's in pharmacy school at Purdue. I asked her to ask one of her biochemistry professors recently about the mechanism of action of BNP.
Yeah.
And the biochemistry professor worked in a weight loss clinic, and he actually had some good feedback for her. He said that BNP, he said that per about 100 milligram dose, it'll raise your caloric output by 10%. And he also said that on top of that, it mimics T4 in the body. So it'll raise your T4 to T3 conversion. But that also would explain why when you stop, your body thyroid output will be a little bit lower because you had that mimicry. So
interesting.
I just want to throw that in there because I was thinking about that.
That's good stuff. And Scott, you had said that before. I remember about the thyroid replacement. You said you didn't need to take any type of thyroid stuff while you were using DMP. I recall that.
Yeah. I mean, when you look at this, probably what the professor explained, it would be a scientific, the work they've done to look at it in a normal fashion. That's why the diet, you have to manipulate the diet to make it work the best, to get a maximum effect out of it with the least amount. But yeah, I mean, maybe that guy could call Skip and help him out so he doesn't kill himself.
Well, I don't need him if I've got you, Scott.
All right.
I'm not your friend anymore. I don't like you anymore.
All right. Thanks for taking the time with our call. We really appreciate it.
Hey, thank you. Thank you.
Take it easy.
Take care.
All right.
All right, guys. We actually have so much material. We've got enough material to do a whole an additional show after this, which is awesome.
We could just do like a Breaking Bad marathon, and instead of making meth for like a week straight, we could just do like BSG shows. Yeah. Breaking BSG.
We could take DMP and like weigh ourselves every few hours to see who loses the most.
Yeah. That'd work out real good. Who dies first?
Yeah, right.
Probably me, actually.
I'm going to throw a question out from the board while I line up our next caller. Let's do this. I've got two callers, so I definitely want to get to them. And we'll go a little heavier on the questions on the next episode because we are loaded up. But while I get we'll get through two callers here and we'll throw in a couple of board questions. While I'm getting this caller together, Scott, I'll have you start out with this one. He asks, T3 has a reputation for eating up a load of muscle tissue when you're dieting. Does it deserve this reputation?
No, it's internet parrot talk.
Thank you. that's good stuff.
Yeah. I'll put it this way. And it goes back to you, the female caller. Go look at how many women use, you know, Cytomel and stuff when they're prepping, but don't use AAS. Do they just wilt away to nothing? Are they like an atrophied bone skeleton? No. There's some very micro effects to that, but I mean, especially if you're using any, you could be using this like 100 milligrams of test a week, and I don't know, you could take T3. That would even be dumber, not dumber, I shouldn't say that about the question, but you know, it's parroted crap here on the internet. So,
and I think too, if there's anything to that, it would be ridiculously or absurdly high doses. Because the one thing I will say is, let's just say, I don't agree that it, eats up tissue like a little Pac-Man either. But I will say that you want to create a huge rebound, especially for a woman after using it. Take that dosage real high and then go to nothing and bring them on. And sometimes it doesn't happen within like 4 weeks, 6 weeks, 8 weeks. They can be like, their metabolism can go to shit like 3 or 4 months later, 12, 16 weeks, and they can't figure it out. They can't put it together. Hmm. And then you have to look at everything and go, oh my goodness, like you are on this ridiculously high. And it's even worse and more prolonged if you try to taper it down over time and you don't get that taper right, which is another, I don't want to go off on a tangent here, but I do want to touch on the taper part. I will say this. If someone comes to me and they've been on high dose T3, I do like to taper it. But otherwise, because I don't like to be a shock to their system. But otherwise, if it's not a real high dose, I do believe, as Dave Palumbo does, that you can cut it, completely cut it, and the body will recover relatively quickly from that. Unless there's some type of pre-existing thyroid condition or you've been on this dose for so fucking long and you're the very, very small percentage of people that is just not going to come off of this compound well. And I think it's very, very small.
Hmm. Yep.
I'm adding our next caller in here. He's got another, he's got a question that's actually related to T3 and T4.
Hello.
Hey, what's going on?
Hey, Scott, how's it going?
Who are we speaking to here?
This is Rob Urich.
Hey, what's up, man? Scott here, along with S2H and guy who goes by Skip Hill. Guys, say hi.
What's up?
Hi.
So, hey, what's your question, brother?
Okay, so I had a question that kind of spurred from the fact that I have hypothyroidism that runs in my family. I don't have it personally, but I was curious to basically get into. I started researching on what I need to do to keep my thyroid healthy. And I came upon iodine and selenium, obviously, and the recommended daily dosage for iodine being about 150 micrograms in the US. But then I also started reading studies that in Japan, like they take in 80 to 100 times that amount, and they don't have nearly as many problems with iodine deficiency or hyperthyroidism. And then I was curious, I read more studies on like examine.com that showed if you take over the 150 microgram dose that some people show signs of having hyperthyroidism. So I didn't know what you guys might recommend for your clients. And then I didn't know if that might change situationally, being like if they were coming off of prep or in the off season. Or another question I thought I'd throw in there, just because what's blood, sweat, and gear without a GH question for S2H is.
That's right. Well played.
I read on forums that GH, part of the reason people stay lean on it is because it increases the conversion of T4 to T3. So I would think you would need a higher iodine and selenium amount to make that conversion continue to happen. But basically, I wanted to know what you guys recommended for your clients, and then situationally on some of those situations, does the recommendation change?
Want it, Scott, or you want to go to me?
The GH question?
Either way, grab one.
Oh, the GH question is, so exogenous GH raises T3 and lowers T4 in the body, so you need to take more T4 with GH to maximize the effects. Generally, it's anywhere from 50 to 100 micrograms. So that one's pretty cut and dry. There was a lot of people talking about need to take T3 with it or anything, but T4 is what you need. Is what you would need to maximize growth hormone. I'm not saying it won't work without it, but it does. If anybody gets on growth, go get your labs done prior, and then once you've been on for 60 days, and your T3 free and T4 free levels are going to start to part ways. They're going to start to come farther apart. T3 lower and T3 going up. What was the other question? Oh, the iodine.
Yeah.
So yeah. The Japanese have a much different dietary lifestyle than we do. Yeah. And the reason behind that study is because of their high intake of fish and the kinds of fish they eat. And once a certain, kind of people, Japanese or whatever, they go through generations and generations of a diet that's different from everybody else, essentially, then they're going to have, that's going to be kind of a genetic makeup in their race. So yeah, it has to do with their diet is why they intake a lot of iodine. It's, moms pass it on to the kids and it keeps going. That's all I have to know about that.
I think we all know that Scott fought very hard to not drop a racial comment there.
He really did, didn't he?
We all caught that. Yeah, we all caught that. The listeners may not, but he was tripping over. He's like, I want to say it, but I don't know if I can. Anyway, that's funny because I completely agree with Scott about the diet. That's the first thing that when you were asking your question that I was thinking, I'm like, it's not the same. I will say that I think iodine, I think it's a great idea to make sure that there isn't a deficiency when there is hypothyroidism. At the same time, God, as Americans, I just think, and I don't even know the statistics, but I mean, it's got to be pretty damn low that I'm guessing, again, I'm being presumptive, so anybody out there can correct me if I'm wrong with, throw it at me. That's cool. But our diet and the American diet, I just can't see that very many people, even below poverty. I mean, I just don't see that we be iodine deficient anymore. It's just got to be very, very low numbers. So I don't think it's a bad idea to check, especially if you are hypothyroid. You want to cover all those easy fixes first, but I don't know if it's going to really help too much. What I can't answer or touch on, simply because I just don't know, is you made a comment that there was some information that said high iodine intake could be in some way related to hypothyroidism. I've not heard of that before. That's the first that I've heard of that. I do know that, as an example, as bodybuilders, we tend to want to take in more. I push more myself, as much as my body can handle. I try to get my clients to make sure that they've got enough, because there's so many benefits to sodium itself that, and it might as well be iodized, that whether it be pump, just muscle fullness, storing carbohydrates efficiently as glycogen. I mean, to do a skip load without extra sodium, to me, it's almost like, why? Or even loading for a show, for that matter, as well. You're just not going to see much of an impact if you're loading carbs without sodium. So, and obviously there's timing issues in there. It depends on when you're loading and stuff like that. I get that. But the point is without sodium, I mean, it's the easiest way to go flat. There's just, there's a whole huge complicated relationship between bodybuilding and sodium, and it's a very, very important component. So, you know, if you're asking, say, numbers, I could throw out numbers. I could say, look, if you're not taking in at least, and again, this isn't for everybody, but this is majority type thing. If you're not taking in at least a couple grams of sodium, you're too low. Because the more water you take in at the same time, the lower your blood levels of sodium are going to be anyway. So if you're fully hydrated and you're taking in bodybuilding levels of water, you need more sodium anyway. Just to, here's an example. If you're taking in 3 gallons of sodium, you're going to, or 3 gallons of water, I got to slow down. You're going to need more sodium than if you're taking in, only taking in 1 gallon of water. Because that water is going to be constantly flushing sodium out, not just sodium, but other electrolytes as well. But the point being, with that bodybuilding level of water, you've got to have a higher level of sodium. Then you have to surpass that to be able to get the benefits. And I always tell people, they're like, well, how much? How do I know when it's too much? Basically, when you're holding too much fucking water. So I've done experiments in the past. This was 06. So it's been 12 years. But I mean, I got up to like 8 or, and Steve Kukulo did this too, but he did it more recently. I got up to like 8 or 9 grams of sodium a day. And I was so retarded. Yeah. I had to work up to it. Don't get me wrong. My water intake was high and everything. But I'm not kidding when I say I sweat enough when I train. But I mean to tell you, it was pouring off of me like a fucking faucet.
Oh, I bet.
But I was so ridiculously full. And the funny thing was, is until I got to about 8, I was about 6 or 7, I was bone dry all the time and full as shit and hard. And then, like, as everybody has that point, that 7, 8, or 9 mark was just too high. And then I couldn't get enough water that I could keep myself from holding it sub Q. I laughed and said, I'd turn my head and I'd fucking sweat. So there's too much, you know, I threw a lot at you and I get that. But again, coming back to the iodine, I don't think that that's a typical, I don't think it's a deficiency except for a very, very small amount of people, and I don't think it plays into the large majority of hypothyroidism in the United States anyway. If you guys disagree, throw it at me, like I say, and if anybody out there has anything to counter that, you know, post it, because I would be glad to see it.
All right. Sounds good. Well, thank you very much, Rob, for your call. Much appreciated, brother.
All right. Thank you, guys.
Thanks.
That's good stuff. You know, I'd wondered if there was an outside max to sodium. I know that you can continue to get used to it and find homeostasis the more you use, but I've always wondered what that outside max would be. I've never pushed up to that, Skip, like 9 grams.
Yeah, it took me a while to get there. Don't get me wrong, because it's a bad idea to, and it was what, 10, 12 years ago. So I didn't have blood pressure issues and stuff. Matter of fact, I was on very, very little gear at that time too. So shit, I don't even know it'd be a nice experiment to do it now and see what I could get away with. But I don't even know where my sodium levels are now. They're probably just around 3,000, I would imagine.
Okay, yeah.
That's my best guess.
All right, so we got one more caller, and we'll take one more question from the board. While I get this call together, we'll go to George UK, who's a longtime listener. He says, hey, guys, never miss blood, sweat, and gear. You guys click every time. He said, took my mediocre genetics back to the stage at the age of 54 after a 20-year competing break. You guys have answered questions for me in the past. Most recent was the use of Arimidex in increased dosage right at the end of prep. Good advice. I noticed improvement. Got a second in a London show and was happy enough to share the stage with amazing guys at the British finals. My question, and by the way, guys, he attached some pictures here, and I've seen them on Instagram too. If you guys get a chance, go over there and look at his pictures. He did a hell of a job. He got freaking gnarly. And he says, my question is linked to insulin use. Would you recommend using it A, on high carb days or skip load during prep? B, use it during a carb up? Best regard, fellas. Always appreciate the show more than you know. So he's saying, let's see, would you recommend it on high carb days or skip loads during a prep? And then he says B, using it during carb up. I think when he says using it during carb up, he means like actually, you know, leading up into the show.
Right, insulin, right?
Yes.
Yeah, okay, I just wanted to be clear on that. I wasn't clear. I don't know if it cut out or whatever. Absolutely, 100%. And, I mean, I don't know how else to... There isn't much else. Like, you don't want to come close to a show and use it for peaking if you don't have any experience with it. Mm. And if your trainer has you do that, I think that's mildly, in my opinion, mildly irresponsible. When you get closer to a show like that, you should already have at least a rudimentary understanding of how you handle specific dosages and things like that. And I think it's always safe. Just my opinion on this. It's better to experiment with loading with insulin when you're not – like depleted, close to a show, that sort of thing. Start doing that either at the beginning of a prep diet, in the off season, something, so that you have some idea of what that time frame is, how many carbs you need, that sort of thing. I just think that's a much better idea. But I think 100% that if you're loading high carb skip loads, I mean, you know, week in, week out, I have clients, and you guys know some that are, they come very, very high levels of body fat, and we will, they'll start loading within a couple weeks using insulin, and they'll just strip it off like it's melting butter in a pan. Now, everybody's different. So if you are loading someone with insulin and you don't think that their progress is very good, I would be pulling the insulin. But keep in mind, the insulin, the reason I say is because insulin can sometimes get in the way of burning body fat as a fuel source, so, or make it less efficient. But the skip load is doing that anyway. You're not burning body fat during a skip load because you're in a surplus, you're adding carbohydrates, you're already going to have high levels of endogenous insulin. So from a diet standpoint or a body fat burning standpoint, whether it's endogenous insulin or it's exogenous insulin, really kind of doesn't matter. It's high insulin levels. So the reason I would say to cut it is because you don't know what those effects are coming into the next day. And when I say cut the insulin, you're also going to have to be careful, obviously, if there's not much progress, that the skip load may not be that big, or the high carb day or the refeed day. And you have to be careful that the carbohydrate amount is enough to justify the insulin dosage. So there's a balance mechanism or a healthy balance there as well. So, but I do, if you can, the large majority of people can not only get away with it, but benefit from it, but just don't start doing that, you know, either close to a show or halfway into a prep. Start that early so that you know where that dosing is and how you respond to it.
Yeah. That and at that point it would make sense, right? Like it wouldn't be a question you would ask. You would just know if it was going to work for you or not, right?
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
Scott, I know you usually don't have too much to add on insulin. Is there anything you want to throw in here before we go to our caller?
I am an open book.
Yeah.
Well, first I'd say congratulations. Props to George for competing at 54 after 20 years and being humble about it. Which,
right.
That can nicely spread over 95% of the bodybuilding community. You know, but yeah, big props. You know, I this is what I say about insulin. This is my theory. Okay, Humalog with higher carb days, loading days, whatever, spread out. I'm not big on, unless someone really knows their body well, or their coach. It could be the individual or with a coach, whatever. They've been working together and they understand it. Because I'm not talking about like coming close to the show and just dropping dead or anything. But you can. I mean, it's like anything you take. Would you try something new like a couple weeks out from the show? Probably not, because it could go awry on you. So it's not a good idea to try it then. Yeah, I mean, if you're comfortable with it, you use it in off season, you know what your body reacts to, what kind of foods you need to have with that, you know, you could use it closer, but I don't think it's a great idea unless you got a good handle on it.
Makes sense. I just sent over a couple of his pictures to you guys. That's you're seeing it right now, Skip. That's George.
Oh.
Yeah, he's got some more that he posted up. Freaking wicked, most muscular shot, and he is absolutely peeled. Like his back is just, lower back is super shredded. So he's been a long time listener to the show, and he's just all around good dude. So I'm glad we can have him, you know, take part with this question.
That's good conditioning right there.
Yeah,
He's got a way better physique than Skip, and he's older than Skip.
I know. Is he older than me?
Yeah, he's 54, he said.
Yep. Oh, see, I missed that part. He's a pretty good-looking guy. Shoot, my wife would bang this guy in a heartbeat. Tell him.
I can arrange that. If it needs to be, I can set it up.
Only if he likes fat girls. I did it. I did it. Ooh. You guys keep that fucking shit to yourself. All right.
You need the light switch.
We'll edit it all out. We'll edit it all out.
No, don't edit it.
All right. I'm connected to the caller. Connecting to our caller right now.
Hello.
Hey, hey, hey. What's going on?
What's going on, brother?
Who are we talking to?
Trey Bruffy.
What is up, Trey? Scott here, along with S2H and Skip Hill.
What's going on, guys?
Thanks for your call.
Trey, the name Trey, and just your voice, you are a meathead, I can tell. I love it. My name is Trey. I eat iron plates, and I eat protein, and that's I eat a little pussy every now and then, too. But other than that, you know what I'm saying? I just pound some weights.
What's going on, man? What's your question for us?
There's a... I'm probably set right now, but after my show, I was going to just run some experimenting because I prep coach for a living. No other jobs or anything, but I was just curious. I know S2H has talked about doing a keto-like diet for a growth phase. I was curious if you'd go in more detail about that, but also possibly implementing Lantus, because obviously I'd be using GH in the process, and then possibly having carbs intra-workout, so I'd also shoot a little bit of a Pedra, hypothetically, around that time.
So Lantus, to back up, the foundation being... are you asking anything about keto in the off season, or you're squared away with that? That's the plan.
I think I'm pretty square away with that. I feel like that's pretty freaking basic.
Okay, so you're good. That works for you.
Yeah. I've tried it with clients. It works with clients. I've never done the insulin thing with clients while on keto.
Okay, so that's where the question comes in: is insulin on keto?
Yeah, because obviously the Lantus would be used with the GH just to help with the insulin sensitivity issues from the GH. Because I'll be using Serostim and Norditropin in the process. So, I mean, 4 to 6 units. So blood sugar levels are going to be elevated anyways. And I've seen in the past where higher fats will cause higher blood glucose levels. I was just curious about implementing Lantus, obviously to offset the glucose levels, but then something like a Pedra that's faster than Humalog with carbs immediately before training. So maybe a few Rice Krispie treats, shoot your Pedra, and then you would have like cyclic dextrin or carbolin during your training.
Now I don't know what a Pedra is. I haven't used that. How fast are we talking?
If I recall, it's like 5 minutes, 3 to 5 minutes, yeah.
5 to 7.
So that's how long it takes to kick in, and then what's the half life of a Pedra?
Like 30 minutes. Sure. Isn't it? Yeah,
30 minutes.
I was gonna say it's no more than like 45 minutes.
Okay, just so that I understand, I mean. Say this again. Is it Pedra or a Pedra? Is it a designer name? Are you in a different country? I mean, I'm trying to figure out what's for this too, because I've never heard of it.
I'm in Ohio. It's called a Pedra.
Okay, so it's
super fast acting insulin,
like faster than Humalog. I am. I mean, I don't know. Okay.
Yeah. Honestly, to me, in my opinion, because I've just tinkered around with it. A Pedra sub-Q reminds me of Humalog intramuscular, but I would do a Pedra intramuscular, if that makes sense.
So okay, that's hitting like in 5 minutes. Like it's hitting, like nailing you.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
So you're slamming, you're immediately slamming the carbs. And the point, my thought was try to maintain somewhat close to ketosis.
Yeah.
While still
the calories to grow,
while still using
while being
carbs,
able to get the carbs, and yeah, okay. While being able to fuel training and everything.
Yeah, that's a hell of a balancing act. And yeah. I don't mean that in a negative way. All I'm saying is, I'll tell you what, I'm shooting this one to Scott first, because I'll be honest with you, I don't have much experience with any sort of insulin when it's a keto type thing, unless there's some sort of, you know, like I say, refeed, skip load, something like that.
Yeah.
Involved with it. But I think what you're saying is, and correct me if I'm wrong, because I may not be understanding, you want the carbs intra is what I think I heard you say, or close to it.
Yeah. So essentially, okay, like what I would do is, Rice Krispie treats are literally right before. So like as I'm walking to the gym, I've already shot the Pedra, start pounding, intra workout during the training also. So the Pedra and just training in general, hopefully just shuttling the nutrients in and out.
Sure.
So by the time you're done with training, you should bounce back into ketosis. I know with clients, like, I do the fat load days. I had talked to Joe Benlein before, and he had mentioned doing those. And then we would do a periodic 800 to 900 carb refeed, and we would do a Humalog, and then they would still be in ketosis the next day.
Right.
So I was just curious, maybe doing it only on training days, just to get the carbs in around training.
I gotcha. Well, and with that fact, that faster insulin, I probably feel more comfortable with it. I think I'm still laughing at myself that myself and Scott did not know what Peter, I mean, I didn't know what the fuck it was.
Yeah, so this is something I've worked on and off with Blue Taylor, and that's something I learned from him. Other coaches have talked about it. It's just not a common thing. You can't really find it around here. It's more of an international thing.
Okay.
And
well, it may not be needed until it's a situation like you're in, or it may not be.
Yeah.
May not be a difference. So in your situation, I can see where this is a big deal, because if you're using something even that's, you know, Humalog, I am, it's still not probably going to be as fast. It's, you don't want to leave any sort of room there. You know, to be able,
especially
when you're trying to stay in ketosis. So I'm interested. I mean, I want to know what Scott says about this too. I'm intrigued. I like it.
So a Pedra, and it is, I believe it's spelled APIDRA.
Yep.
Yeah, a Pedra. So I've actually used a Pedra. I just can't remember the spelling. So it's basically it's a very fast acting insulin that's used by type 2 diabetics. Yeah, type 2s. Yep. And they use it to cover their meals when they're on a long acting Humulin R, Lantus, whatever. And so what it does is to be honest with you, it's used by a lot of type 2s that don't have a good diet, so they use it to cover their meals. And it's got a really short half-life. He might be right. We're somewhere around 30, 45 minutes or something, but
it's even more than an hour.
Yeah, sub-Q, it takes, you know, like 15 minutes or something to really, I think it's 15 minutes prior to meal, something like that. But if you go IM, obviously it's faster. But I'm not a big Lantus fan, and I wouldn't be a big, especially here. Well, if you know your body and you know you have a high enough fat intake and you high enough amount of the proteins or you know, everything that can convert through glucose genesis, and you've got that figured out, you know, it's something that definitely can work. But I can say this with a client, it'd be tough for me to make that call, and I'm just not a big Lantus fan. But I mean, a Petra,
I wouldn't have it. This is strictly me to, like,
oh yeah,
I'm 23. I decided to quit all my jobs and everything to coach for a living. And it's more, I do this to experiment and to learn. So it was, I would never, with the Pedra thing, I would never have a client use that, because honestly, I don't trust them to have all their shit together.
Yeah.
Right. That's a good point.
In 5 minutes, and then they end up having a hypo episode, and I'm not there to fix the issue.
Yeah.
So it's more me to finger around.
I think it could work for you. I mean, if you know what you're doing.
Talked about in the past, you had, I'm assuming you were helping Joe Benlein when he was growing on keto. So it was just doing that and then implementing that just to get the carbs in around training. And then obviously, non-training days, there wouldn't be any carbs.
Yeah. I think once you have the diet figured out where you're intaking enough fat, which usually is the problem with most people. They don't take in enough fat.
Yeah.
And so they don't adapt to that high fat. And they're not using the proper aminos, either through food or through a supplemented exogenous, you know, the OTC supplement like he makes in his company. As long as you've got that part figured out, and because, you know, intaking like 60% fat is not really normal to most people, but that's there or plus that is where a lot of people have to be. And once you've got that figured out, I think from that point, you know, you just need to. My only fear with Lantus is that, and this could just be me, is that, you know, it's how long acting it is. If you know, that could be a little slippery slope, but if you've got yourself figured out and you've got glucose tabs and Morpetra or whatever, you know, so you can fix yourself if something goes.
Well, this is downhill. Totally off topic, but with Lantus, it's like, I'm a huge fan of it for like the IGF affinity, binding affinity benefits. Have any of y'all seen, I don't know how much y'all have used, have any of y'all seen that the more you use it, the longer the half-life becomes?
Well, it's like anything you put in your system. It's going to, once your blood levels, everything starts to build up. You know, I mean, you're going to have some carryover effect with it. I mean, it's kind of like the people that say, oh, I took my last shot yesterday and 2 days later, like, oh, I don't have any levels and I'm falling apart. Now, obviously insulin's, you know, a little faster operator than testosterone, but
yeah,
I mean, I think you can do it. I would say this, if we were just having this conversation BS, and I'd say, hey, run it for like, you know, 2 weeks and see what happens, and don't live on it. You know what I mean?
With information.
But, you know,
be OCD, be a perfectionist, keep track of it, monitor every single fucking thing, you know, from blood sugar. I think you probably will be fine because based on, you know, how you're explaining it, you have all that, you got it covered. You're on top of it. But you make a very good point that it is a slippery slope with other people, and to trust someone else that they're going to do it. You know, that's a tough one. But I'd be interested to hear if you could check back in with us and let us know
how
it went. That'd be great. I'm intrigued. I'd like to hear myself.
Yeah. Like I said, I'm 33 days out. I mean, Scott's seen my pictures. We've talked back and forth. So as soon as I'm done with this show, that's the plan, is slowly work into ketosis and then start experimenting. Just because I've always done, I mean, this past off season, I was at 920 grams of carbs and 500 protein and 65 fat, and nothing happened. I literally stayed the same. Nothing would budge. That was with 2 to 3 cheat meals a week on top of that. So it was more to see, maybe I respond better to higher fats.
So you're going to compete in the middleweight class this time instead of the welterweight division, right, in 3 weeks?
So I'm sitting at 187 right now, so I'm going to try to get in the middleweight.
Oh, no shit. Okay, at the cutoff being 176, I'm throwing this out there, but 176. I had you higher than that with that metabolism. I'm sitting over here laughing going, I'm so funny. That metabolism is out of control. Oh, my God.
Yeah, so
maybe that's 23.
I'm just curious y'all's thought on that. I mean, I don't really hear anybody ever talk about it.
Yeah, I want to. What's going on, Scott?
I'm looking at the picture you sent me.
Oh, he's okay. It was something. Yeah, I sent both of them your picture, Trey. The before and after of your leg shot, man. You did some fantastic work bringing those quads up, man. They just huge night and day difference.
Holy God! I mean, I guess so.
Yeah, I mean, the show thing is the last second thing. If anybody has my Instagram, I got in a car accident back in February, had to be revived at the scene. Was told I could never use my arm or hand again. So after losing 50 pounds and getting my shit back together, after being in the psych ward from PTSD and everything, my body just started working again. I was like, okay, I got a huge website release first of the year. I need to do a photo shoot. I'm just going to push it and get this prep done with. It'll be my last time to do middleweight. I haven't competed since I was 143. So,
damn. See, my joke did not work. So backfired in my face. Right? Holy shit!
Hey, do you?
That's essentially what you did. I mean, you moved up. I mean, you're talking like 30. What is that? 30 pounds or something? Holy shit! 40? 30? 40? Yeah. Oh man.
Trey, do you feel like having had the near death experience changed your outlook and your focus?
Yes and no. So I'll be honest, like, being 23, I started using it at 20. My goal was never to be a pro or anything. It's like, honestly, I graduated high school. I wanted to coach people. That's literally all I want to do. So my goal was to experiment with, no matter how crazy it's going to be, experiment. So if I get a client, something's going on, I've experimented at least with myself so I can understand what the hell is going on.
Right.
So, like, before the wreck, I was, like, 230. I was doing 100 to 150 units of Lantus a day on top of Humalog. And I would be lying if I didn't say I was at the emergency room two or three times before that, thinking I was having a heart attack. And, I mean, blood as can be, I was doing so much gear, just trying to run experiments. And then after the wreck happened, it changed everything. Less is definitely more. But also being more positive, and like, it's just definitely changed everything in a good way. Like, it's worked out, but it was definitely tough till about a few months ago, like having to go check yourself into a mental place and depression, being told you need to be on 10 different antidepressants and PTSD and everything, which that's still issues, but definitely helped because I've had clients that have similar issues. So it's allowed me to help them, but I don't know. It's a cool story to tell, just like the whole story of the wreck and how it changed everything. And like, definitely took my life from where I never had a party stage, but that was my party stage. It allowed me to end that pretty quickly.
I bet, man. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for taking the time to come on and share a little bit of it with us. And it's cool to put your voice to your face now, because I see you all around, you know, social media and stuff. And definitely keep us posted on how things go with your experiment.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I'll definitely check in with y'all in 2 or 3 months, let y'all know, I guess.
Sounds good. Appreciate that.
Perfect. I appreciate it, guys.
All right, take care.
Take it easy.
All right, see you, brother.
Bye-bye.
Wow, that was something else, huh?
Yeah, fuck my life. I'm not saying anything for the rest of the podcast.
Right? my cat food isn't delivered on time.
No, man, it's just horrible. That was actually horrible. Because exactly what I said, to be a fucking joke, was what happened. Now, here's the bitch of it. The guy fucking put on like 40 fucking, those legs.
They're ridiculous.
You're going to have to put the picture on the web. People have to see this.
Okay.
They have to see this after I put my giant fucking foot down my throat. And then turn around and give this guy props because he needs it, because those quads are retarded. And that's about a 40-pound difference. What I did, and I understand that now I'm trying to explain it away, but what I did was his metabolism was so fucking big and so out of control. 900, where in the fuck is he putting all, and 500 grams of protein?
Right.
I had this guy at like fucking 250 or something.
Right.
Oh my God. So that complete, I'm laughing. Like I said it, I'm like, I'm waiting for everybody to laugh. No one's fucking laughing. And he's just like, oh yeah. And I'm like, oh fuck me. It was awful from there. So I deserve it. I was so presumptive that I, based on his macros and based on what he was talking about, this is kind of advanced gear. I mean, listen,
oh yeah.
He'll get beat up for that from some people. I'm not beating him up. Hey, you're doing what you're doing. He admitted he was kind of on this, you know, he was slamming shit and he was trying to get big. People do that. That's cool. But based on everything he was providing, I had it. Come on. You guys had him. No, you didn't, Scott. What about you, S2H? Did you have him at, you had to have him at like fucking 250, right?
Well, I didn't see his picture until after he said his weight.
Yeah.
When did he say his weight?
When you were.
Well, 180. Yeah. When I put my foot in my mouth. But prior to that, you didn't have any sort of like vision in your head. Like this guy was a fucking monster.
Well, I don't, my brain doesn't
always help me out. Help me out.
I know exactly what you're saying, Skip, but I did know who, I knew who he was because we were interacting for the show. And I've seen his pictures and stuff.
I just feel terrible because it so backfired. He was a good sport about it. That's cool. But that doesn't change the fact that huge, huge assumption on my part that totally completely backfired. So there's that.
Yeah. Well, it was good, man. We've got a bunch of good stuff here. When we start back up, let me see who we had here next. I can't even get back to the main page. Next episode, when we start up, we've got a bunch of questions from Travis Gardner, who's your client, Skip, out of Australia. Yeah. So we're going to start up the next episode with his questions, and we've got a bunch more from there. We'll do a bunch more listener call-ins and stuff. And listen, guys, I appreciate love. I asked for questions, and you guys more than delivered. So we've got a ton of great material here. If anybody else has questions that they want to add, or if you want to do a call-in on the next episode, just keep your eyes open for the thread. I'm going to post up another one like the night before we do the show, and we can get some stuff together. It'd be fun, man. I think this turned out to be really good. I'm really pleased with this, guys.
Cool. Yeah, hey, I have a question for our listeners.
Oh, yeah.
And this is, if you actually have had this work, have had this, you know, you have direct hands-on experience with it. Okay. If anybody has had a Blue Yeti mic work on an Android smartphone, S9 or S8 Plus, please send Scott McNally a message, because we've done all the YouTube videos, all the Google searches, and if anybody actually has achieved this ultimate, it's like climbing the summit or something, you know, please let us know, because there might be somebody smarter than us, because there's lots of people smarter than us.
Sounds good to me. What do you guys got going on today? Skip, your clients are in town. You got any plans for today, or are you guys just hunkering down and waiting for the weekend?
They're at the beach right now. And we'll be going to train back tonight at Titan.
Nice.
And what else? Oh, Brittany's coming in. Want to see how she's doing. She'll probably end up training tonight as well. She got to sleep at some point because she drove all through the night last night. Probably only had a couple hours of sleep. So, yeah, it's Monday. Tons of shit to do. But it'll be cool because everybody's here.
Sweet. Do me a favor. Post up lots of pictures and stuff. I want to follow along with how everybody's doing.
Absolutely. Yep, we'll do.
Scott, what do you got going on?
Oh, I was going to ask Skip, are these the French people?
Yeah, yep.
Are they wearing Speedos?
No, only when we go to the pool and to the beach. Okay. No. Over in France, they have nude beaches, though. So here I have to force them to put on clothes. They want to run around naked everywhere. So I'm like, oh, can't do that in the United States. We do not look kindly upon the naked body. We think it is repulsive, repugnant, and... give me another word. I don't know. Bad. Negative.
Not here in the land of the free.
Right. Exactly. That's bad stuff.
Yep. Well, I'm going to put a Speedo on today just for you, Skip, and send you pictures.
Nice. I appreciate that. I might go walk my cats, but nobody will go with me because apparently they don't like to walk cats.
Have you gotten it to work? The stroller?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, it works. Took Zuri. Took Linus. Actually, Linus got his balls crushed 2 days ago. So he's recovering from that, and he's a little fucking hellion, so he's pretty much recovered and just bugging the shit out of the other cat. So I'll get him out for a walk, if not later. Probably not today. I got too much to do today, to be honest with you.
Give me a video of that. I got to see what this looks like.
Yeah, no, I definitely will. I'll take some pictures.
Please, please spare me of that one.
And I'm going to tag S2H in it.
Let's get out of here for another episode of Blood, Sweat, and Gear with S2H and Skip Hill. I'm Scott McNally. We will see you soon.
I'ma slam your ass in the paint. Puffy weaker than the fucking block. I'm running through, nigga. And I'm smoking Junior Mafia in front of you, nigga. With the ready power.
Like, I just need you to get this, and you get it. It still doesn't work. You're trying to plug it into a phone. I don't know. It just strikes me as really funny. And I'll just leave it at that. I'm just going to leave it alone after that. Had to get that up. Oh my God. And we're over here like, I don't know, you don't have a fucking computer like a normal fucking person. You know, like a normal person, you can't use it.
Skip's having too much fun today, Scott.
No, I'm trying to plug my phone. It's all over YouTube. He's getting all fucking pissed off. Oh my God. How many people do a fucking podcast with a mic, a Yeti to their phone?
You all right over there, Scott?
I'm not done yet. He's pissed.
I'm
sorry, because I gotta get
plotting,
just
plotting section.
Five shots couldn't drop me. I took it and smiled. Now I'm about to set the record straight. With my AK, I'm still the thug that you love to hate. Motherfucker, I'm from N.E.W. Jers with plenty murders occurs. No points of comment. We bring the drama to all you heard. Now we check the scenario. Little C's, I bring you fake G's to your knees. Coppin' please, it's easy. Little Kim, is you coked up or doped up? Get your little Junior Waffle click smoked up. What the fuck? Is you stupid? I take money, crash and mash.
Advices Radio Network.